you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
You're listening to Sci-Fi Wire's Days of Marvel podcast. On today's episode, it is Lucky Day 13 of our 15 days of everything else. Stay tuned. Hey, everyone, and welcome to Sci-Fi Wire's Days of Marvel podcast. I'm today's host, Morgan Johnson. Unlike our previous seasons, which I know you've all listened to, instead of counting down to a movie release, we're just celebrating some of the wonderful and not-so-wonderful Marvel movies that we haven't covered yet. Each day, we'll tackle a different movie, talk about the plot, call out our favorite moments, and discuss its place in the ever-growing world of Marvel. Let's get cracking. Today, I'm joined by Sci-Fi Wire co-host Ben Fallon and Caitlin Bush.
Hello.
Hey.
We also just learned that Ben is a professional dancer. Look him up.
This blew our minds. This is just a fun facts about Ben podcast now.
Yep. Yeah, we seriously considered changing.
That was told to you in confidence.
You know what? It's going, that conversation would be a lot better than this hour and a half long movie we are about to talk about right now.
Yeah, so today, like I said, 13 out of 15, and we are tackling the 2015 reboot of Fantastic Four.
Fantastic Four Stick.
Fantastic Four Stick.
Yeah.
Can you say that again, Ben?
Fantastic Four Stick.
No, you're supposed to say it's fantastic, like at the end of the movie. Fantastic. Can you say that again, Ben?
You got it.
I forgot about that line until now.
Guys, I got it.
I just watched it 15 minutes ago.
I didn't forget it.
I watched this movie in theaters. I paid money to see this movie.
Whoa. You and not a lot of other people.
Yeah.
All right, before we get too far down the rabbit hole, Warvis, Sci-Fi Wire's Jinky Jarvis, is here to help us out when we forget how to do our jobs and don't research well enough. Warvis, give us some good-to-know stuff about 2015's Fantastic Four.
Hey guys, it's me, Warvis. Can't wait to see Josh Trank come in hot from his 2012 Chronicle debut. Fantastic Four 2015 should be the best ever.
Thanks, Warvis. I think that was pretty succinct, to the point. You're earning your paycheck.
Thank you.
Yep. All right, guys. Now is the time. The movie segment breakdown. Let's talk about it.
Begins
in 2007, when a small Reed Richards thinks that he...
A very small Reed Richards.
Small. S-M-O-L, small.
I am small.
Small.
So yes, we start in 2007, and Reed Richards is supposed to be giving a presentation about what he wants to be when he grows up, and he goes into a very long-winded explanation of how he is going to invent the first teleportation machine.
Well, even if you could build a thing, which you can...
I've already built it. Well, I'm building it in my garage.
Is it next to your flying car?
It's like, good for you, kid.
And he says that he's already built it.
Which, again, good for you, kid.
Ambitious.
The teacher's a dick, though.
Yeah.
Like, granted...
It's a running theme in this movie. Yeah, there are a lot of mean people.
It's true.
Yeah.
Like, granted, he's really obnoxious, and he definitely did not do the assignment at all. And so, like, the teacher is more than, like, okay with being, you know, what are you doing? You're gonna have to redo this. Come on, kid. But you don't need to, like, bully a child. Like, that's literally what you're doing, is you're being one of the bullies.
Publicly shaming him. He could have said, okay, sit down, Reed, and then had him say after class to, like, have that conversation with him. But had to do it in front of everyone.
Reed's been put down his whole life, you guys.
Yeah. He's a smart man who's been put down or not appreciated enough.
I wish there was a name for that. Being a nerd.
Yeah.
Yep. And we return to Fantastic Four 2007. Anyway.
Yeah. So we see Reed has been put down. He has high hopes for himself. He is trying to put together this teleportation machine in his garage, his parents none the wiser. And he is scrapping for parts in a junkyard where he encounters Ben Grimm, who is also in his class at school.
Excellent actor, played by excellent actor Jamie Bell later.
Yes.
But not this child.
But Jamie Bell was fantastic. But like, he's
I wish
not
we saw
used.
More of him. Exactly. Like, we don't see him.
And also this little Ben, who we see his dad owns the junkyard, his family does. He has like a whole very complicated family situation, it seems. He actually is the most interesting character in this movie by far, and he is not in it at all.
Yeah, they are very oddly matched as best friends.
Yes.
And I'm assuming it's because they are both outsiders, because Reed's an outsider because he's too smart for everyone. And I guess Ben is an outsider because he comes from a bit of a troubled family life.
Right, and he's all rough and tumble.
Exactly, and wrong side of the tracks type of thing.
Mm-hmm. I guess they like look out for each other. I guess the whole idea is that, I mean, as we talked about in the first Fantastic Four movie, their whole thing is they have each other's back all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which is something that it stays true to this iteration as well. It's very much, I was very warmed when Reed first goes to the Baxter Foundation. What's it?
The Baxter Foundation.
The Baxter Foundation. And he's like texting him Ben pictures of their progress on the machine. He's
and
like,
Ben's like excited for
he's
him.
He's like, couldn't do it without you, buddy. Like, wouldn't be there. Like, you know.
It's deeply cheesy, but yeah. Like, Ben
I
also
liked it.
Ben helps him like move into his new dorm.
I know, it's like dropping him off.
it's a rare view at a positive male friendship.
Yes. Yes.
Hey, there's a shining
you
know, light.
There you go.
That's I love it.
A point in the Fantastic Four 2015 mm-hmm. column.
Yes.
But they become friends via both of their outsider status. And then we see 7 years later, they are still working on that same teleportation machine at their high school science fair. They're in mm-hmm. high school.
They're quite young. They're in high school. But like the other
they're
kids surrounding
but it's
them.
It's Miles Teller.
But it's Miles Teller. And like the kids surrounding them look significantly younger.
That's what I'm saying. Is this like elementary, middle school, and high school science fair day at the same time?
That's what I thought, maybe. That's the only explanation.
I feel like they wanted it to be high school, and they're like, but we need Miles Teller in this scene, which is a problem.
And also, we don't know what 15-year-olds actually look like.
Correct.
I think all of those things are valid, and yeah. You just get this kind of real confusing gym situation.
Yeah.
Also, shout out to, I don't know who this was, like, makeup department? Because the little kid that plays Reed, they also put the scar on his face
mm-hmm.
that Miles Teller has. Yeah. And I was like, good attention to detail, guys.
Yep, yep, yep.
To keep that consistent.
Gotta find the, we're gonna keep finding the positives in here.
Props, yeah, yeah.
Props to that script director for continuity.
Yeah, the script
good
supervisor.
Yeah.
Props to props.
Props and makeup, we salute you here.
Yep.
And so Ben and Reed are doing their presentation for the same grouchy teacher.
Mr. Richards, shall I alert the fire department? What is this?
This is a cymatic matter shuttle.
And they have discovered a way to put something in a different dimension and bring it back.
But they think they're putting it in like the Gobi Desert or something because they keep getting
sand.
This like
yeah.
sand rock thing.
Yeah, so they're like, we're unsure, but it could be anywhere, but we take it to a place and it comes back.
It looks kind of messed up.
Yeah, like it's been through some stuff. And they are quickly disregarded as like only it being a magic trick where it's very clear that a lot of science was involved. So
right.
I don't know, that teacher knows nothing. But
like, this is the dumbest person on the face of the planet.
Exactly.
Yeah. But okay.
But they garnered the attention from Franklin Storm, director of the Baxter Foundation, which is a government-sponsored research institution for young prodigies. I had to look it up because it wasn't very clear.
Yeah, it's really not.
In the movie, exactly what he was doing with all these kids. But yeah, that's
out
what
of
it
context,
is.
That's terrifying.
Yeah.
It's like, it reminds me of like the Spartan program from Halo, except like
yeah.
less violent.
I mean, it reminds me like all he needs is a wheelchair and he could be Professor
X. I was about to say, it's kind of like the Xavier School
yeah,
a little bit.
Exactly.
But for nerds instead of mutants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
And
which is way less interesting.
Way less interesting.
That's
fun.
Just like your local magnet program.
Yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
He has his daughter Sue with him.
What are these?
Sonic projectors using cymatics to modulate the field.
Taking pictures, and because it's Kate Mara, you don't really know how old she's supposed to be, and mm-hmm. you can't really tell.
Yeah.
they are at the science fair and start asking Reed and Ben all these questions about their project. And super dramatic, Professor Storm goes,
"You just did."
"Oh, you're serious?"
"I think you've cracked interdimensional travel."
Like, he says it such a straight face, but it's so dramatic. I have all of his, like, lines written down. I'm like, who talks like this?
Oh, my gosh. I have so many of his lines, too, written down.
Yeah. "You've cracked interdimensional travel." Like,
cool, brah.
And the two of theirs' reaction, too, like,
is spot like, on. Like, I mean, what? Like, what? Random dude?
What? What do you mean? Who? Also, how did he find them?
There's a lot of questions. Yeah. Unanswerable
Nothing
questions.
Nothing makes sense.
Franklin Storm has a Cerebro, but just for smart kids.
I was just about to say that. Thank you.
Yeah.
My God.
He just puts it on. He's like, ah, there's a smart one.
I mean, that's how he found Sue and then adopted her.
Hey.
Which is also creepy.
Which is also creepy. Mm-hmm.
Everything about because this Baxter knows, Foundation is creepy.
Because she just understands patterns. We'll get to that anyway.
I mean,
that's her pre-superpower, understanding patterns, post-superpower, invisibility.
Invisibility.
Cool.
Anyway. Cool. Very cool.
Yep.
No doubt.
Checks out.
So Reed is quickly swept into this world of super nerdy young prodigies and just moves into the Baxter building. And we find out that Professor Storm has a lot riding on these children. As said in the boardroom, we support you, but you put a lot of faith in these kids.
Yeah.
And I was like, valid. Yeah. This seems like something NASA should be working on.
Not even that. I cannot imagine any viable universe. Obviously, this is a movie. Obviously, it's a superhero movie. Whatever. But I cannot imagine a viable universe in which the U.S. government is like, we will give millions of dollars to your 17-year-old like army of nerds like to build an interdimensional travel portal thing.
I mean, even similar, it's like, why are we giving millions of dollars to smart children? They're not even just nerds. It's just smart children.
Exactly. Like,
I was a smart child. Where's my millions of dollars?
They do say the children are our future. So they're well, really, they're really.
I believe his term was
fix
the
what
failures
my
of my generation are opportunities for yours. And I'm like,
and then he follows that up with,
if you want to fix what my generation broke,
what did you break? What are we talking about specifically? Did you not crack interdimensional travel, so you broke
change,
it?
Change.
This is like, what if, and not to bring it back to Brooklyn Nine-Nine, but like, what if...
Always bring it back
what
to
if
Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Captain Holt spoke in a not funny way? Like, what if everything Captain Holt said was not funny?
That's exactly who he is. Oh my God.
He takes his life, his work, his prodigies very seriously.
Very seriously.
Like, everything is serious.
And the weird doctor from the first Hulk movie is there to be like, why are you doing this?
That guy.
Yeah.
I was trying to place where I'd seen him before. And he's got the same crazy eyes as he has in
Edward Norton's Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Somehow, Franklin Storm convinces the army to give them more money and give him just a little bit more time because he thinks Reed is the key to solving all of this. And he's putting his life on the line, truly, by bringing Victor back onto the project. And we find out that he was also a young prodigy that he put a lot of faith and trust in. And he ended up setting fire
to servers
and like leaving in a very bad way. You never know what happened, but it's messy.
Right.
His departure from the Baxter Foundation. But he's bringing him back on because this was his project to begin with.
Played by another amazing actor, Toby Kebbell.
Yes. This cast is incredible.
Yeah.
I, like, got chills when we first see him in that, like, weird basement.
Right.
And he's, like, not very disheveled, unshaven. And I'm just like, this is creepy. I feel like the feeling of this is creepy crossed my mind so many times in this movie.
Well, this is clearly, like,
clearly
the movie that the director wanted to make. Like a horror movie, a body horror movie. There are parts of it that like come through, and then you realize that you can see the moments in which Fox stepped in and were like, we are changing so much of this.
Yeah, it fluctuates for sure. Yeah. And you can see that give and take, but it's not seamless in any way. Yeah. It's very jarring.
There's also we should talk a little bit about this version of Victor Von Doom being like this strange hacker or something. Like,
it was so interesting because as we've been watching all three of these movies, my boyfriend has watched two with me. The first Fantastic Four, and then I watched Silver Surfer alone, and then he watched this and he watched this one with me. And then he comes in and he's like, so they just changed everything from like the beginning? And I was like, kind of.
Yeah. Literally everything.
They just changed it.
Just rebooted it.
Yeah. And he was like, oh, okay. I was like, yeah, it's just different. Cool. It's just different now.
Yep.
Also something that I found that in the original, the romance between Sue and Reed is so
prominent.
And then also the romance between Victor and Sue is so prominent. But here it's just like glances and subtleties and nothing is ever said outright.
Which I appreciate on some level.
But it feels weird that. Because it, you know, it's such a big part of the story, and for them to just completely like neglect it feels kind of weird.
I think
that's more of like a screenplay and director's kind of the result of those choices, because like,
yeah,
there's a way to do that like quick scene where Sue and Reed are like flirting. There's a way to do that where it's like very obvious, but this was done in a way that was like, hey, how do we suck all the energy out of a romantic scene?
Yes.
Yeah.
And
like,
they did.
Their meet cute in the library wasn't meet cute. It wasn't cute. No. It was just her.
And Reed was really fucking obnoxious the entire time.
It was really annoying. Sue did not seem like a normal human.
No.
She didn't seem to enjoy.
She is an android.
Exactly. She didn't make eye contact. Everyone knows that's number one thing you do when you like someone. You make eye contact.
Yes.
She didn't do that.
Yep.
Then there's the only reference of her and Victor is that he calls her Susan.
They have this weird, like, antagonistic, weird flirty thing.
And then he gets jealous when he sees that her and Reed are talking.
Right.
And so that's the only bit of like any kind of, oh, and then at the end when he's like, I saw a different future for us, Sue. And I'm like, this is the first time you've ever even hinted that you liked her to us. Like, this is coming out of nowhere.
We, the audience, did not know this.
Yeah. So that was one thing that I very much noticed as a large departure from the original in this reboot. But back to the plot. Victor is brought back in after Franklin Storm tells him to clean up.
So he does.
And he shaves.
He does.
And
I'm like,
cuts his hair.
He like really, he does it, man. Yeah.
And he comes.
He's a handsome dude.
I like the look. Yeah.
I love his line where he's just like looking over Reed's work. He goes,
rudimentary, elementary. This is basically a child's drawing.
Which
that was
literally
my favorite line for the end. God. It's okay,
I mean,
it's
sorry,
one of my
sorry to steal your thunder.
The notes that he was looking at, if you notice, are literally the notes that Reed was drawing
in
as
2007.
A child
yeah.
in 2007.
Yeah,
so. Which is like, hey, Victor, you're right. Those are observations that are correct in the real world.
Yes. Yeah, good
this
job. Was clearly made by a child.
Good no job, problems. Honey.
But this is when we get that rousing speech from Professor Storm to all of them to be like, put your petty squabbles aside. This is time. Like, you can change the failures of my generation. You guys need to come together, change the future, et cetera, et cetera.
A number of times he just mentions my generation in kind of like a, like, this should be a major plot point, but we haven't really discussed what my generation did before this, like we were saying.
Right,
like,
something was cut.
Yes, something was cut.
I felt like that multiple times throughout the movie.
There was a large portion of this movie constantly. That focused on a bunch of old people doing bad things to the environment.
I mean, it's an hour and a half. Lot was cut.
Yeah. And I was surprised because by the time it was over, I was like, "Is this already the climax? This is
it?
The third act. This is the big fight? Oh, okay. It came along swiftly.
Anyway. Mm-hmm.
And then we're introduced to baby Michael B. Jordan. He looks so young.
He's so
real
tiny.
Quick, like, is introduced in like a Fast and Furious scene.
Now you promised me we'll still be cool after I dust your ass.
Racist.
And then he comes in.
After crashing like crazy because he's not paying attention to anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the number one thing you do in Fast and Furious is pay attention to what's going on.
In your car.
Yeah.
In your car.
You may need to just shoot a grappling hook at a tank.
Come on, man.
Come on, Michael B. Jordan.
I want Michael B. Jordan to be in the next Hobbs and Shaw.
You heard it here first, guys.
I hope there's no Hobbs and Shaw sequel.
I was just about to say, are they making another one?
No, I don't know, but I need it. My trash heart needs it. Anyway, that's not what's important.
For all.
oh, could Michael B. Jordan be Idris Elba's son, kind of how they did in Pacific Rim when they brought John Boyega in to be Idris Elba's son? Let's do that.
Yes.
This is now approved. A podcast about Michael B. Jordan sequels.
Anyway.
But like Caitlin said, Johnny gets injured in his car race and his dad has to take him to the hospital. He comes out with a sling and another amazing Franklin Storm quote.
My money, my car. You want it back? You're going to have to earn it.
You have to work for me. So intense.
Okay.
Which is like, okay, dad.
Dad? Yeah, it's like, are you sure you're like not the villain of this movie? Because he delivered it in such a way. And
aren't
I'm like,
you supposed to be like the mentor figure here? Like, why are you so intimidating?
Yeah, he's very intimidating in this scene. And obviously he's trying to go for like, I'm your dad. You're going off the rails.
I mean, I guess you get the impression.
You have such potential, like the classic, like, you're not living up to your potential.
Right. It just comes off as very transactional.
Right.
Yeah.
It's very much like, I gave you a thing. Now the thing is mine. Now you must pay off for the thing.
Right. The development of the father-son, father-daughter relationship is not nearly as much as it needs to be for any of the emotional scenes between them to land.
It doesn't really, that's what, you know what?
They don't seem like a family.
They don't seem like a family. It seems like they're his employees. He's like, do this work for me because you guys are smart.
And they're not like emotionally messed up by that either.
No.
It's not like a point, you would expect it to maybe be a point of contention when they're like, oh, my dad always focused all of his, like, his energy in work, and like that's a deep stereotype. But
again, it's something that is glazed over because when he picks him up, when his dad picks Johnny up from the hospital, and Michael B. Jordan has a line where he's like,
"You're probably too busy to notice,"
and it's like a very quick, and that's the only
there's something there.
That's the only hint of like, oh, you are a dad that's wrapped up in work.
Right.
And there's a little bit of obviously like sibling rivalry because he's like, Sue is the perfect child because she works for you and is so smart, and I'm the rebel because I like to race cars.
It's not my dream dad, it's yours.
Yeah, it's they're walking around that.
The first time I watched this in 2015, I didn't really put together until like halfway through the movie that I was like, oh, Sue's adopted and they're the family in that way.
I mean, they don't explicitly say it until you're well into the movie and Miles Teller like legitimately asks. He's like, so you're adopted? And she's like, yeah.
Yeah, that's... Yeah.
And then he says, oh, I know what that's like. And she goes,
you were adopted?
No, I just wish that I was.
What kind of rapport is this?
And then he asks her where she's from, and she says Kosovo.
Yes.
And then he says,
you don't have an accent.
And then she speaks in a very bad
Russian accent.
I don't.
It's so strange. It's a very strange interaction. Once again, I don't see any chemistry, don't see any romance. And I believe after that interaction is the moment where Victor becomes jealous.
Right.
And I'm like, what are you jealous of? Reed making a fool of himself?
I mean, I think it's partially the script, and it's partially, I think Kate Mara and Miles Teller have no chemistry either. Like, even with that bad a script, like, two actors who do have some sort of chemistry can eke out, like, a feeling.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But Miles Teller is just really good at being angry.
It's true.
And this is all happening while they're, like, just, you know, building a quantum teleporter.
Right. With teenagers.
Teenagers building a quantum teleporter.
You get the montage of them working really
It's a construction montage. It's not even like a superhero montage. It's a construction montage.
A very bad CGI, too. Did you guys notice how it looks really bad?
And then they throw in the, like, let's all sit around and eat Chinese food to show we're becoming a team.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But that's just, like, one shot. That doesn't really convey to us that you are now a team.
They're friends.
Yeah.
We also forgot about, like, Michael B. Jordan's or Johnny's first line when he comes in and he sees Victor. Is he calls him Adolf.
Yes, because apparently he thinks Latveria is the same as Germany.
Oh,
And I think that's the same as when he makes the Borat joke.
Yeah.
I think it's him just making fun of him being from another country.
This is the first of, like, many like, hey, this Johnny Storm is pretty mean.
He's a dick.
He's like, yeah, not fun.
No. And as we were saying in the other Fantastic Four podcast, like the reason why some of those movies work is because Johnny is so, Chris Evans Johnny charming. Is funny
and charming. You, yes. I mean,
he's a dick, but in a charming way.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think Michael B. Jordan definitely has the capability to be charming.
It was just the script.
It's just the script, and I guess, like,
I mean, we all saw Black Panther.
Yeah.
When he said, take him off your hands, it was like, oh, God, you could take me off your hands, boy.
Exactly.
And then
so,
in this one, he's just like, hey, it off, and you're like, what?
What? Yeah. It's not funny. It's
yeah,
not
Michael
charming.
B. Jordan is a wildly charming human being.
Mm-hmm.
This Johnny Storm just sucks.
No, yeah.
It's the worst.
The worst.
Ugh. But after some bad jokes, some a construction montage.
And a lot of like useless science talk. Like they talk a lot of like bad science at you that you're just like,
Okay,
fine. Cool. None of this really means anything.
Would it be a Fantastic Four movie without science talk?
Well, you can have science talk.
An extended monologue about science.
You can have science talk and have it mean a little bit of something. Like whenever in Avengers they spoke about like science, it always to further the plot. And this one, it just felt like...
This is true. It feels like work.
It's a means to an end.
Yeah, just to like shove in something to take up some screen time.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, they complete the quantum machine
thing.
The quantum gate. Mm-hmm.
And then they test it on a monkey.
Yes. I was getting some Uncanny Valley vibes when they had the like close-up of the monkey's face. Because I'm like, this does not look... It looks like a real monkey, but it also looks like a CGI monkey at the same time.
That's trying to be a real monkey.
That's trying to be a real monkey. And I was like, I was just like put off by it, like major Uncanny Valley.
Yep.
So yes, they do a test on they put the monkey in the quantum gate to get to Planet Zero. All of this terminology we found out in the science talk section.
Yeah, we find out that it's called Planet Zero, apparently.
It's the negative zone.
It's the negative zone. It's literally the negative zone.
Cool. They do the test. The monkey is safe, thank God, because I was like, I swear to God, if they kill this monkey.
I thought the monkey, I'm not going to lie, I thought the monkey was going to come back with superpowers, but like it wasn't going to manifest till later. I had not seen this movie before until watching it for this podcast.
It's Night Monkey.
So like I legitimately was watching it and I was like, oh my God. And then they're going to come through and they're going to come back. It's going to be kind of like similar to the first Fantastic Four movie. And they're going to come back. And then before they all start developing superpowers, there's going to be a superpowered monkey running around and they're going to have to catch it. And that's when they're going to realize that they have powers. That is not what happened.
No, but
that would have been so much better.
But a callback to another Fantastic Four movie, as Chris Evans Johnny said, every team needs a mascot. And it could have been been the monkey.
What if that monkey later on becomes Hit Monkey?
Oh, my God.
The famous
I'm loving this
comic book monkey that is also a hitman.
I'm loving this.
I was unaware.
Hit Monkey is
amazing.
Very good.
What?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Check it out.
Go read Hit Monkey.
Okay. Last podcast, we gave our listeners the assignment to
read Silver Surfer.
Silver Surfer by Dan Slott.
Your new assignment and mine as well is
Hit
to read Hit Monkey.
Hit Monkey has absolutely nothing to do with what we're talking about right now, other than the fact that Hit Monkey is great and you should go read it.
The test is successful, and the facility supervisor, Dr. Allen, is like, great, good job, guys. You're going to hand off the baton to NASA, and we're going to try to do our first man-made mission.
Which makes sense.
Which
is like how you should do things.
But then they get all up in arms because Dr. Storm before had been like, you guys, you'll make it, and then you'll go through the tunnel or whatever.
Yeah, that decision didn't go up through the proper approval channels.
Because you don't send 18-year-olds to the negative zone.
Facts.
But I will say that we are approaching like the part of the movie that I do thoroughly enjoy. This is the part where I think the movie, you see a kernel of what Josh Trank wanted to do.
Exactly.
After they get their powers.
Yep. Well, even before that, like while they're in the negative zone and then like the whole process of coming back.
I agree. Yes.
This is where I think the movie is like, oh, this is the kind of movie that I think he wanted to make.
And it's actually like really messed up and really good.
Yeah.
This is where my favorite line in the movie is. I'm going to skip it and come back to it during the section where we're supposed to talk about our favorite lines.
Since Ben's was already ruined.
Sorry, Ben.
It's okay.
Sorry, Ben.
Okay. I figured you come really prepared, so I figured you have backups.
I do.
See?
Yep.
I knew it.
We're ready to go.
Cool. So, Caitlin, like you were saying, they are unreasonably very disappointed that they will not be the first people to go to Planet Zero. And so as teenagers do, further proving they should not be the ones to do this, their solution is like, let's get drunk. So they're drinking and they get the great idea that they should be the first ones. They can go just for 5 minutes.
Why don't we go first? God, this thing works, okay? We can go up there, take 5 minutes. We can take a flag, plant it down, get our footprints down there. We're going to be the first people over there, okay? Screw those guys.
Pull a Neil Armstrong, put the flag down, and come back, and no one will be the wiser. It's at this point that Reed is like, I can't do this without Ben. He was so important for me getting here. He's like, I'm not going to go without you, buddy. Guys, what do you do if your best friend calls you in the middle of the night and says, bro, trying to go to Planet Zero tonight?
Say more right now. That's what I say. That's what I say.
Solid
on the phone.
John Mulaney reference. Yeah.
Tell me more immediately.
That's so good. He seems pretty chill about the whole thing.
Right.
And is like, okay, give me a sec. I'll be there.
I mean, granted, like growing up with, I think he alludes to this a couple of times, like Ben growing up with Reed Richards, who is a genius, but also insane.
Yeah.
I feel like it takes a lot to phase Ben. Like
probably.
It takes a lot. Can you imagine the number of times that a younger Reed Richards showed up at his house in the middle of the night and was like, we're going to go on an adventure that like doesn't really make sense, but I promise it does. And Ben's like,
yeah, okay. I can see that. That is essentially the crux of there.
And this is really the last time we ever see Jamie Bell.
Yeah. So he gets to the Baxter Foundation and the one person of reason is like,
you guys sure you're in the best shape to be doing this?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because he can tell they're all drunk.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then
Michael B. Jordan does this stupid like chair thing that featured.
That is the most charming thing that Johnny Storm does in this movie, though.
Agree.
It was featured so much in the trailers.
It really was. It was because it's the only moment of humor really in the movie.
Yeah, it's the only mildly humorous part of the movie.
Also, what I noticed is there's very little time that they spend together as a team. Yet I remember like the team shots and like them all standing in like the typical Fantastic Four lineup was also featured very prominently in the trailers. But it's really like two shots at the end that you get of them in like their superhero stance.
And working together too.
Yeah, so I felt misled in that way as well.
Yes.
They go to Planet Zero.
Mm-hmm.
At first, you get a nice callback because I liked this moment as well when Reed is like, please don't blow up, please don't blow up, please don't blow up. And it's a callback to the first time they tried to do it.
When it did blow up.
When it did blow up. And then Ben has the response where it's like, he knows. What does he say? He's like, that's not what I want to hear when we're about to like go to another dimension. It's like, he knows.
It's like,
he knows. So I think that was a nice play off of their friendship and how well they know each other.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a redeeming part.
Sue stays behind too. Which
they don't
I was
even
surprised
tell her
by. Yeah.
That they're going.
Right. Yeah.
They, because it's three of them. And then, because it's four pods. I think it's either Victor or Johnny that says, but there's just three of us. And you would think logically they would be like, let's invite Sue. But instead, Reed's like, I'm going to call my friend Ben.
Yeah.
You guys have heard me talk about Ben, right?
So that's how they get
to. I feel like I talk about Donkey Dog all the time. That's what it felt like. That's what it felt like.
Donkey Dog.
So I do think it's strange. And then she only finds out and comes to the lab because she gets a notification on her laptop
that the portal has been opened.
Dad, you need to come to the lab.
Something's going down.
I'm a tattletale.
What if she didn't know they were
like
using
malfunctioning
it?
Or
what
something?
If she thought it was malfunctioning? Like, that would be the smart thing because she's like, I don't know what's happening, but something's happening. So maybe she wasn't trying to tattletale.
Yeah.
I feel like she genuinely just did think that like it was malfunctioning.
Yeah. I'll give her the benefit of the doubt on that one. And so at first they don't think it worked. And they're like, man, I don't think we went anywhere. And then they open the door and it's like, oh, no. They made it.
The negatives here. The thing about the negative zone is it's not that weird.
No.
It's just a little bit barren.
Yep.
And green.
Yeah.
It's really the green lava stuff is the only thing that other than that, it could be. In the middle of like a desert somewhere on our Earth.
Yeah.
But
not that weird. But they're like, oh.
Oh, this place.
Oh, this alien world.
So Victor notices that the green stuff in the ground seems to be coming from one centralized energy source, and he wants to follow it Johnny makes some quip about, this is definitely going on Instagram. And I'm like, oh, yeah, this is 2015.
Yep.
Like
millennials.
Mm-hmm. It's like further, like, drive a knife in that you guys are too young to be on this expedition. And so Victor is, like, fully enamored with this green energy source, wants to get closer to it. Would my first reaction be to touch it? Absolutely not.
Nope.
Yep.
No one's first reaction would be to touch it, but for some reason it's his. He touches it, causes what all looks like a volcanic eruption in the ground that they're standing on, and they all have to race back to the quantum gate and to Johnny, who is like holding their belay.
Yeah.
Together.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah.
And in trying to get back to the top into the quantum gate, Victor kind of like is left behind, and Reed is holding on to him. And then an explosion of green energy liquid covers Victor, and you kind of see his spacesuit melting.
Right. It kind of looks like acid a little bit.
Yeah. It looks very acidy, and it's very gross.
Yeah.
There's a lot of screaming.
Yeah. And unfortunately, Victor falls because his glove like disintegrates essentially due to the green stuff, and Reed can't hold on to him anymore. And Reed's very distressed and is like, we can't leave him. But Ben is like, no, bro. We got to get out of here. And I think this is a really cool moment where the same thing they did with the first one, where you see a preview of what their powers are going to be.
Yeah.
And so they get back into the quantum gate and they're all trying to close their doors.
Please, the door. I can't close the door. Ben, the door.
Ben's won't close because like rocks are flying at him.
Yeah.
So like a bunch of rocks get into his like pod.
Yep.
And then you see Johnny's is like getting really hot, and like he like explodes with fire.
Yep.
And then I couldn't really see like the stretching element of
Reed's.
Does
he get kind of just like banged around a little bit or something like that? And so he has like whiplash or
a little. I didn't really see any, like, unlike those two, I didn't really see anything with Reed's.
Right.
Yeah, I didn't see obvious. His.
Yeah, but this is like one of the bigger moments of like tension in the movie, which is like really good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's like
actually
a good moment.
Like it's deserved. Yeah. The tension is deserved.
Yeah.
Oh, but they're also yelling at Sue at the same time, like,
manual
save us,
override!
Save us, Sue!
Manual override! Like, okay, got it.
So she brings them back, and they come, like, they bring some of the energy back, and of course it blasts through and attacks Sue as well, and she turns her. Invisible.
Exactly. She starts phasing, and so that's the preview of her power. And then this, like you were saying, this is a really tense moment because you see from Reed's point of view and everything is destroyed and he's on the ground and kind of comes to and he just looks up and sees Johnny on fire, completely engulfed in fire.
Yep.
And rightly kind of like passes out and is like, what just happened?
After also seeing what he assumes is his friend stuck under a pile of rocks.
Yeah.
Too.
And then after seeing his body, he's like crawling to try to get to Ben and doesn't think anything's wrong, and then turns around and see that his entire torso has been stretched because his legs were pinned under some other rock. So
it's
this is
terrifying.
The beginning of like the body horror. Oh my God, this is gross, very raw, very visceral kind of aspect of
the
movie.
Never show that in Fantastic Four. They're always just like, Reed has now stretchy powers, and it's not like,
but you
well, what if you started off not
about that?
Yeah. What if you, like, you can't control it at first? That's gross.
It's gross. Ugh. It's like you don't have any bone. It's like that scene in Harry Potter when when he has all of the bones zapped out of his arm and then he has to have them regrown, but he's on the Quidditch pitch and his arm just like flops. And the noise it makes will haunt me to this day.
Ugh.
No, thanks. Thanks. I hate it.
Thanks. I hate it. And so I think this is like the turning point, like you guys were saying, where you really see the director's vision of what he wanted this to be.
Just because having like Reed laid out on his bed with like his arms super stretched and tied to it.
It's incredibly clinical and othering the way they treat them post explosion.
Yeah.
Whereas in the first one, they discover their powers well after the fact.
And they're superstars.
And they're kind of like on their own and figuring out. And this is a more realistic expectation of if all of a sudden four people had incredibly heightened powers and abilities, you bet for damn sure the government would have them under serious
lock and key
and testing and experimentation
and figure out how to use them to its advantage.
Exactly.
That's
so,
the most realistic part of this movie is 100%. The government taking advantage of these people who have gone through this like horrible thing.
Exactly. And so I think this was a darker take, 100%. It's not like the fun we are. We're not celebrities. But it's definitely more realistic, which, I mean, I appreciated that choice as something different to do with the reboot. So then we see the government is interrogating Professor Storm, and they're like, you're saying this was all under your supervision. All these kids are your responsibility. And he's like, I'll take full responsibility of whatever you want. Just show me my children. And this is how you get the walkthrough of Johnny is on fire. She is phasing in and out. You know, you see Reed. He has tried to escape through the ventilation shaft.
Yeah.
And he comes across Ben, who is just a mound of rocks, even more so than we originally saw in the first Fantastic Four movie. And the line uttered more than anything in this movie, I think, is, help me, Reed!
Please, help me, Reed!
Like, he's just, like, crying out for his friend, and I'm like, that's heartbreaking.
And it's also something that this does really well is, when it happens in the original, Ben Grimm is, like, fully movable. He's, like, immediately after he transforms, he runs to New York like Latveria, apparently, where they're in their ski chalet slash hospital.
And finds a trench coat and a hat.
Exactly. Whereas this, it's like you can see how in pain he is, which makes sense. Like if all of your body became rock grinding up against rock grinding up against rock.
Yep.
That hurts. And I think, you know, fast forward a little bit when they do get Reed. Reed asks him, and he's
does
like,
it hurt?
Does it hurt? And he says, I've gotten used to it. So yeah, it does hurt. And that's them acknowledging that these powers are not all fun and dandy. It's very physical for him, especially.
Yep.
Right. By the way, you mentioned it. We do a hard cut to like a year
one year later.
But it's like a hard cut.
No. We see Reed, he escapes.
Yes.
Supposedly, no one can find him.
Mm-hmm.
And no one can find the stretchy boy.
The stretchy boy.
And then, hard cut to 1 year later, which is the weirdest choice, I think.
Like, do you think it's weird because you think they would need more time? Like, it should have been 5 years later? Or are you saying it should have been less time?
I think it's just like, it's just
weird.
It's weird, and the tone shift is
insane. This is clearly where that hard cut is where Josh Trank's movie ended.
And Fox's movie began.
Yeah. I mean, because the cut is specifically when Dr. Allen is like, let's make a deal. You become an instrument for the government to use and we'll quote unquote pretend to work on a cure for you.
Right, right, right.
And that is kind of like, you know, I'm selling my soul to the devil, essentially.
That's exactly what it is. To the dad, to the guy from Holes, anyway.
Yeah.
And that's that hard cut. And the next thing we see is surveillance footage of all of them being essentially pitched out to say, these are our new super.
Which just happened in the bad way, by the way. We get a scene that's more or less the same thing, just a little bit more positive, which is like, what a waste of screen time.
Truly.
But also, I think this is one of the better displays of like Sue's powers.
I agree. I think it's an interesting, it's definitely better than the first two.
Better than the consistent nosebleeds.
I was
waiting for it this whole movie. I was like, does she get a nosebleed in this
Same.
One?
It's just so prominent in the other two movies.
How do you guys feel about the force field balls? I don't really know if I like them.
They're very Sue. They're very Sue.
I think they reminded me of something. I can't put my finger on it now, but I really love that, speaking of the wig that was just mentioned, I love that you can actively tell what was reshot.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the wig specifically.
Yep.
Like, whenever Sue has a wig or Miles Teller has really bad facial hair, that's a reshoot.
Yep. Because Miles Teller was like, I ain't gonna shave for this.
Yep.
I was wondering, because the only time I see that he has really bad facial hair is when he is in Central America.
Yep.
There are portions of the final battle too where he has some bad facial hair.
Yep. Okay. I was on the lookout for it.
Yep.
Well, essentially, this is when we get to, they have their powers. The government is using them. They track down Reed and he's like, I wanted to help. They find him via Sue's pattern recognizing abilities.
Her real superpower.
Her
folks.
Real strengths are here.
It makes no sense whatsoever.
The real strength was the friends we made along the way.
Cute. Very cute.
And so what I think is interesting is Reed comes back and he's able to fix the quantum gate in less than 10 minutes. They've had a year to work on this. And
they were too busy doing like black ops strikes to even worry about it.
Using Ben Grimm to destroy tanks.
Yeah.
So this completely naked Ben Grimm, by the way. He's not wearing pants.
They don't wear any pants.
He's not wearing pants. It's really off putting.
Hate it.
It's really uncomfortable.
It's weird.
No thanks. I hate it.
I hate it. Denied.
Yeah. Reed fixes the machine. They send not them. A separate team of people back into Planet Zero, and they discover that Victor is alive. And he says really cryptically, I knew you guys would come back, which at first you think is like, oh, I knew you guys would come back for me. But you realize in his snippets of his evil speech when he's gone crazy, it's more so you guys came back due to your greed, like you couldn't leave this place alone,
right?
Of vibe.
Yeah,
well, like, and I think they explain in a brief aside before this where they're like, the reason we're going back is because we want to gather some of this energy to make more of these people, to make more soldiers for our team, which like makes sense why Victor would be like, I know what you're about.
And we'll say this once now, but this is the worst Dr. Doom has ever looked.
It's so bad.
Ever.
It's so just bad.
Everything about it is bad.
I think it's just weird that he...
His lips are the worst.
He doesn't, he doesn't move them. So like when he's talking, he doesn't move.
Supposed to be like energy like fused to his body or whatever.
Yeah, I think there's literally a line where I think it's either Sue... I think it's Dr. Storm where he just says... The accident fused your suit to your body, Victor.
Oh, yeah.
That's like, and they were like, so they're explaining, this is why he looks like this.
Yeah.
And it's like, I see what you did there. It wasn't a good choice.
I see what you're dropping. Not picking it up.
No, thank you.
Dr. Allen is like, we want to help you, Victor, but you need to tell us everything you know about that place. And this is when he's like, no, I don't want you guys to... You guys already ruined this world. Don't ruin mine. That place gave me power. Yeah. That place is like for me. I don't care if I'm alone there. If this world has to die so that mine may live, so be it. And then he goes ape shit and like
becomes a murder boy.
Kills everyone.
Murder boy.
A lot of murder in like really short time.
A really
span.
Short amount of time.
He explodes a dude's head inside of his helmet.
Yeah.
With a very gross. A very gross sound effect.
Ugh.
It's like a watermelon being smashed.
Yeah. So he kills Dr. Allen with the super gross head explosion. And then he also kills Professor Storm, which I feel like is just unnecessary. You could have just pushed him out of the way to get to the quantum gate. He didn't have to kill him.
Yeah.
So, not cool.
No. And then Sue and Johnny, like, gather around their father.
Who didn't love them.
And there's, like, no emotional depth to it whatsoever.
Yeah.
And
he's
like... Work together as a team. You
promise me.
Yeah, like you can do it. Like,
yeah.
If I were Johnny Storm, I'd be like, Dad, where's my car?
Oh my God.
You promised my car. I'll only do it for a car.
Victor goes back to the negative zone, Planet Zero, and starts creating a separate, like, not force field, energy source.
Thing.
Like,
and he starts absorbing. When they get there, Reed actually says, matter from Earth is being converted into energy.
And then he says...
Really, Reed?
Cool.
Okay.
He says he's pulling everything into the other dimension. Like, wow.
Oh, okay.
Cool.
Cool, man.
He's pulling everything into the other dimension. Ben, Johnny, Reed, and Sue, like, follow him to try to, like, to stop him, obviously. And this is when we get the line, there is no Victor. There is only doom. So he's officially taken on the mantle. And we get this flashback scene to where Doom has kind of taken out all of the Fantastic Four as they try to take him on their own. And you get that Reed on the ground, seeing Ben covered in rocks, seeing Johnny like on fire. And it's a callback to how this all started. Mm-hmm. And
literally like 30 minutes earlier in the movie.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And there's not enough time in between. But in this one, instead, he does the right thing and stands as the hero. Mm-hmm. And they get all on the same page and decide to work as a team. So Reed distracts Victor while Sue creates a force field that hides Ben so he can get close enough to punch Doom into the portal's energy beam and therefore disintegrating him. And then Johnny comes and closes the portal by knocking out all the rocks.
And then they just know, once they're ready to escape, Sue just knows which way to take them through the beam. And they just understand, like...
This was a really quick, like, third act fight.
Oh, it is. They wrapped it up quick.
It's literally, like, I was scrolling through it. I think it's, like, 8 minutes or something like that.
Yeah, it is. Wow. It is not long.
Yeah.
Similar to the movie, you know, that's the end. Yep. And so the battle is finished, and they come back to Earth.
I do want to say... Sue's like force field flying and all that. Real cool, and I love it.
It's good.
Oh, I asked you how you felt about the force field balls and you didn't say anything.
I like them.
Oh, okay. It's good. Yeah. Ben is pro force field flying balls.
Yeah. It would have been cooler if they did like her like flying on like a force disc, which is what she does.
I was going to say, that's what I wanted. Mm-hmm. But.
Yeah. But she needed to be able to carry all of them. Yeah. So it needs to be in a ball.
This is true.
Just couldn't have had four force discs, you know? Mm. Or three, because Johnny can fly.
Yes. So they save the day, they get back, and the military is like, we thank you. And they're like, we want space to do what we want.
It's a whole, like, the Marvel Cinematic Universe made an entire movie about the government trying to, like, assert control over superheroes. And this happens in, like, literally 30 seconds where they're like, we want you to work for us. And they're like, we're not going to. And then Ben just kind of like growls a little bit. And then they're like, okay, here you go.
Here's a building where you can work on a cure.
In the middle of nowhere.
They get their space. How much? A lot.
A lot of space.
They get a lot of space known as Central City. Mm-hmm. And they can study their abilities and either find a cure or get better without government interference. And we get this lovely ending line where Reed... finally finds a name for all of them. Human Torch and the Torchettes. Thank you.
Yep.
Yep. That's good.
It's better.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about all from the comfort of your home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
All right, we've gone through the plot. Favorite moment, favorite quotes. Ben, you can start since I stole your thunder earlier.
I only have a favorite quote. Well, No. That's not true. Sorry. Favorite moment is when they get back and you're like seeing all of the terribleness that they've been through. That's like a good moment in the movie because that's like, oh, yeah. Because Josh Trank has said before, he really wanted to make like a body horror exploration of this, of the Fantastic Four. And I can see that there, and that's where it shines. It just so happens that the second half of the movie was not his to make. Mm. So that was my favorite movie, or moment from the movie. My favorite quote is from earlier when Sue is talking to Reed, and it's delivered so dryly. And she's like, I gotta say, it's fun having you here. And Reed is like, really? And she goes, no.
Nope.
That's how I feel.
Wow. Yeah. I don't even remember that.
Yeah.
Caitlin?
I agree. I think my favorite moment is all of the body horror because that's the thing that I think makes the most emotional impact in a movie that does not have a lot of emotional impact. I think it's the most relatable moment in the movie because that is the most human reaction anyone has. And I think my favorite line is when Doom has come back and he's like causing shit and blowing everything up, and the emergency protocol system that's going through, the like Siri robot lady voice just says,
"There is an emergency in this building."
And I'm like, no, really? And it's just like, I've never heard that be like
Thank
an emergency. There is an emergency in this building. Oh, okay.
Could
cool.
you be more specific?
Like, so that's my favorite line because it's really stupid.
Great. Solid. I would say mine is right when the group finds out that they will not be the first going to Planet Zero. Victor has this really quippy one-liner that I just loved. He goes,
"We could send our political prisoners there. Waterboarding in the fourth dimension could prove very effective."
That's actually really
and
good.
And I was like, oh, nice. I like it. I like it. I like it a lot.
Yeah, he has a couple of lines in there where he just like is landing them one after the other.
Yeah. So I really like that one because I felt like that, you know, was him, his character coming through.
Yeah.
And that guy's a really good actor. So it was delivered really well. Is there anything that we want to take from this movie and bring it into the MCU?
If anything, this movie is what not to do with the Fantastic mm-hmm. Four. For
we
the
said
most
that
part.
In the last one too.
Well, I would say
no one's ever really made a good Fantastic Four movie. Is the moral of this trilogy of podcasts that the three of us have done together?
I know, and I think that's part of the excitement, but also the pressure that the MCU and Kevin Feige has is
yeah.
this doesn't have a great track record. So they need to be able to do something different.
No one has high expectations.
But something yes. good.
Yeah. I will say, if you bring a negative zone, just bring in a Nihilus.
Yeah.
That's all you need to do.
That's all you need.
But don't start off that big.
No.
Do like Mole Man or something.
Please. I would love a Mole Man movie, honestly. Yeah. Fantastic Four Mole Man movie.
Yeah.
Very pro. I like the manifestation of Sue's powers. I thought the walls were interesting. Like, the animation on those was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Please put pants on the thing.
Give him pants.
Please give the thing pants.
Pants for Thing 2022.
It just looks so wrong.
I heard that pants will make him dance.
That's cute.
I heard that, too.
That's what's going around the office.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's cute. Other than that, I mean, like we said, this cast is really amazing, but what they were given to do with it was not, and a lot of them are not people I would have ever chosen to cast for these characters. I could see a world in which a lot of them could work with the correct leadership and the correct script, but otherwise, man, there's a reason that this movie has a 9% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Whoa, I did not know it was that low.
Quite low.
Wow. We've said everything that we want to say. Keep Johnny Storm charming,
please.
Mm-hmm. Add some,
give
you know,
Sue more to do.
Levity.
Give Sue more to do.
Write a better Sue.
Yeah.
Across the board, she has not been done right in any of the three of the three movies that we've had. So, those are some things you can start with MCU. Any more? I will help you out for a consultation fee.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep, we don't just give out advice for free.
We have so many ideas.
Yeah.
They're just right for the taking.
All right, guys. Thank you for sitting with us through this Fantastic Four. Four-tastic. Fantastic Four-tastic.
Fantastic Four-stick.
Fantastic.
Four-stick Fantastic
Four. Four-stick with just the three of us. But it's been fun.
Yeah.
Yep. Thank you for from Human Torch and the Torchettes.
Yep.
Oh, who gets to be the Human Torch? Oh,
You're the Human Torch.
Oh, I am?
Yeah.
You're the Human Torch.
You're the Human Torch. Yes. You're the leader here.
We'll do this again, and I are
the Torchettes.
Yeah, we'll do this again in 2022
when
the next Fantastic Four movie is released.
We'll all come back together.
We call dibs on the 2022 Fantastic Four podcast.
Take note, Warvis.
Yes. Yeah. All right, guys, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe, and join us, not specifically us. I know you've gotten used to our voices the past couple of days, but tomorrow it'll be a different group of lovely Sci-Fi Wire colleagues, and they will be unpacking Venom. Good luck to them.
Yeah.
Iconic.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.